homes in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. He's always accompanied by his 10-year-old grandson, Ahmad. They look for bits of wood from the doors or furniture of the many destroyed homes and buildings around them. Once the man and the boy have collected enough, Saeed carries what he can on his back to the courtyard of his house, while Ahmad drags as much cardboard as he can to be used to ignite the wood. Saeed told the electronic intifada over the phone, "When we arrive home, we build a fire and announce it to everyone in the neighborhood so anyone who has food they want to cook can bring it. Hundreds of people often come." On some occasions, Saeed gets wood from trees, but that is increasingly rare. Most of the trees have simply disappeared from the north. At other times, he said, when their search is fruitless, they forage from homes that have only been partially destroyed. He said, "We always leave a letter on the wall asking the owners for forgiveness and to explain that we are forced to take their clothes and furniture or we die."
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, habits. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I welcome you to the program A to Z. Well, we want to talk about habits and how they play their role in our personal development and how they play their role in the society. So, what is a habit? This is the first question. Well, whenever when we do something, when we perform an act, it has an effect on our self. It has an effect on our soul. Well, when we repeatedly do something, this inner condition which makes this performing of this action easier is called habit. Habit is an inner condition which makes you do something easily, which makes you do something with pleasure and easily. So habits gradually become a trait and they play their role in the formation of our personality. So habits are very important. They play a role in our success or failure. So if you look at the human behavior, you will find that we start, if I may give an example of a ground, of a land, where you put a seed and you start watering it. With the passage of time, you find that it grows into a plant. It becomes a plant. So you repeatedly water that seed. The same thing goes for our actions. When we do something, when we perform an action, and when we repeat it, it gradually becomes a habit and it plays its role in the formation of our character. Welcome back to A to Z program. We were talking about the habits. Well, as we told earlier, that habits play a role in our success and failure. So, what does a habit do? Well, when we develop our habits, they gradually make our character. They gradually make us what we are. So, a character is actually some of the habits and the deep-rooted traits of your personality. So how they play their role in our behavior and how they play their role in the society depends upon what type of habits you built within your course of life. If you build the habits which are based on rationality and which are based on the teachings of Quran and teachings of Hadith, then those traits will play the role in your success in this life and your success in hereafter. But if you develop your habits based on your own personal whim or based on your desires or just the physical inclinations, then those habits will play their role in failure in this world and the failure in the coming world. So I ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He help us to develop the habits which are helpful, which are rational, which are based on the Quranic teachings, so we may be successful in this life and the hereafter. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Ya Allah, Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
Ya Rahmanu Ya Rahim, Allahu Allah. يا غفار يا قهار
الله الله
يا وهاب يا رزاق
الله الله
يا فتاح يا عليم
الله الله
يا رحمن ارحمنا يا رزاق ارزقنا يا لطيف الطف بنا
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. In the US, hundreds of students and faculty have been arrested by police for participating in protest encampments on university campuses in support of Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eyrot, students at the Columbia University encampment protesting against the Zionist regime's assault on Gaza have over the past week sparked a wave of similar actions on college campuses across the U.S. The students all have similar demands, one being that their institutions divest from companies linked to Israel's human rights abuses against Palestinians and an end to the war in Gaza, which has been deemed a genocide by rights groups, UN experts, and several sovereign countries. The demonstrations have meanwhile recently been called anti-Semitic protest by U.S. President Joe Biden and some American lawmakers and media pundits. So why have these protests recently erupted at American universities? And what do their demands for divestment mean exactly? Demonstrations have been taking place on college campuses since the Zionist regime began its war on Gaza in October. The protests were a reaction to Israel's military response to the October 7th operation, which has so far murdered more than 34,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children. U.S. universities have become a central point of the wider pro-Palestinian protest movement in the country, which has, among other demands, called for an end to U.S. military support to the Zionist regime, an end to Israel's war on Gaza, as well as an end to what several rights groups have deemed as apartheid system of Israeli control over the occupied West Bank. These encampment-style protests first began at Columbia University in New York City, where students had set up around 50 tents on the campus south lawn. Middle East Eye visited the encampment at Columbia University last week, where students said they would also be focusing on building a community around their activism and demands. Since then, these encampments, set up in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, have popped up at more than 30 universities in every corner of the country. The protests have been staged for many reasons and have numerous demands around the issue of Palestinian rights. Aditi Rao, student protester at Princeton University, told Middle East Eye, "We decided to reclaim the space as a liberated zone and rename it the Popular University for Gaza." One of the major demands of these protesters is for their respective schools to divest investments from Israel or from companies that are profiting off of the Zionist regime's war in Gaza and Israel's wider abuses against Palestinians. Another one of the demands for schools to cut ties with the Zionist academic institutions, which they say have played a key role in Israel's occupation of Palestine. Pfizer College in California recently shut down its study abroad program with the University of Haifa after concluding that the partnership did not align with the college's core values. In terms of divestment, students at these demonstrations have called for their university administrations to divulge their finances and to be more transparent about their investments in weapons manufacturers and Israeli companies profiteering from the Zionist regime's occupation and war in Gaza. There is some information, though available data is limited, surrounding the investments that schools have in Israel-linked companies. At Columbia, for example, students are demanding the university end its investments in businesses linked to Israel, including tech giants Amazon and Google, which has a $1.2 billion cloud computing contract with the Zionist regime's government. The students have also demanded an end to investments in U.S. war contractors profiting from Israel's war, such as Lockheed Martin. At Yale University, students told Middle East Eye that they are demanding the institution divest from all weapons manufacturing companies contributing to Israel's assault on Palestine. Yale University has student exchanges and collaborations with seven Israeli universities whose presidents signed a letter accusing U.S. university students and faculty of supporting terrorism. Harvard has programs with three of these universities, while Columbia has long-standing relations with at least four of these Israeli universities. No Although university students in the United States have long protested against their institution's investments in Israel's military or its occupation of Palestinian lands, over the past several years, there have been a number of different student bodies, faculty groups, and colleges within universities that have adopted the Palestinian-led boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, or BDS movement. In May 2022, the faculty of the City University of New York's Law School passed a resolution endorsing BDS. A month prior, the editorial board of the Harvard Crimson, the Ivy League school's student newspaper, similarly endorsed the BDS movement, saying, "We are proud to finally lend our support to both Palestinian liberation and BDS, and we call on everyone to do the same." And that same month, in April 2022, the Middle East Studies Association voted overwhelmingly in favor of a resolution backing BDS. In addition to divestment, calls for boycotting Israeli academic institutions in U.S. universities have grown. Last year, the American Anthropological Association passed a resolution backing a boycott of Israeli academic institutions. Many of the student-led protests have been met by their universities with force, while repression from administrations and police brutality against students and faculty is on the rise. Columbia University President Nemat Menoche-Shakik ordered the New York Police Department to disperse the South Lawn encampment, leading to the arrest of 100 Columbia and Bernard College students, including the daughter of U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. In addition to being arrested, the students were suspended from school and told they would not be able to finish the academic semester. Over the past few days, videos shared on social media have shown police violently arresting both students and faculty who were peacefully protesting on campuses. At Yale University, around 50 protesters were arrested by police on charges of aggravated trespassing for their participation in the protest on campus. Organizers at Ohio State University said that pro-Palestinian demonstrators were beaten and tased by U.S. police. Police have also arrested others, including journalists covering the ongoing demonstrations. At the University of Texas Austin, video footage shows police grabbing a journalist from the crowd and then throwing him onto the ground before arresting him. The widespread police response to these demonstrations has raised fears of a possible repetition of the Kent State Massacre in 1968, when the Ohio National Guard opened fire on student protesters demonstrating against the Vietnam War. The shootings by the U.S. forces at Kent State killed 4 and injured 9 others. To protect their students, some faculty members have joined the protest and created human chains around the tent encampments in order to prevent police encroachment.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station. Choo choo kachu. It's the Youth Station for you. Here in the studio, we have Sister
Asma.
Sister Asma.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Assalamu alaikum.
And we have myself, Muzaffar Haider, at your service.
Thank you for yourself being here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Of course, same in here. Likewise. How do you define pain?
Pain. Pain, I don't know, like, you get injured in some way, I guess, and then there's pain receptors in your brain. It travels up your spinal cord, and then...
These days, everything is just like a trigger for pain. Everything really? Is painful. Really? Life has been so painful.
That sounds really awful and sad, sister. How is that?
How is that? When we're living in a world in which you have to see many things, like kids getting killed and you cannot do anything, then these images are going to create a pain inside your heart. And then this pain is going to get piled up because you cannot do anything.
Yeah.
Like, it might happen in a closer scale as well. Like, when you look around in your own city, I don't know, in your neighbors, you might see people who are suffering from poverty.
Yeah.
You see people suffering from a kind of a special disease or sickness, like a kind that does not have any cure.
Yeah.
And then everybody is suffering in a special, particular way.
Mm.
So all of these things are pain. I know that there is a positive point to life as well, but I guess totally human beings have been created in pain.
Yeah.
That's actually the same notion that exists in the Holy Book of Quran. There is no way to separate people from pain. Like, that's a thing that has been interlaced with your soul.
Mm.
It's in your essence. And sometimes it has got good points to itself, like it would have some positive effects because it's going to let you think more. It's going to let you be more productive.
Right.
And sometimes, no, depending on the kind of person you are, because sometimes we're so weaker than what we're feeling. There is a huge burden upon our shoulder, and those pains are going to be so destructive.
But which pain, you know, sometimes you have the pain of having to kind of suppress yourself for the sake of being accepted.
That's a different sort of pain, which is so sad and depressing.
Can you explain this? Like, I never understood it. Why would you, like, suppress yourself to be accepted by others? Is that something that I do? I'm trying to figure it out. I can't at the moment.
See, there is this maybe misunderstanding that might happen, in which if you become a kind person, you're not surpassing yourself in order to please other people. You're practicing what humanity has put inside of you as a burden.
Right.
Like, for example, if there is a person who always treats you wrong, you don't necessarily have to have a lot of interaction with those people. But when it happens, out of, I don't know, modesty, politeness, out of the fact that you do not wish anyone any harm, you try to be this philanthropist sort of a person who does not do any harm to other people. You keep it kind, and you just make it not look like it's a war in between you. These kind of people are not called people-pleasing kind of a person. The people-pleasing person would do anything to make everyone satisfied with them.
I see. Okay, well, if the ceiling was, like, falling down, it's gonna crush everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to suppress everybody. But then, like, you allow it to suppress you, and, like, it, like, you hold it up so that everybody else can be okay. Is that still sacrificing? And does it, see what I mean? So I'm
yes,
asking, like, how do you suppress yourself? Like, which part of yourself are you suppressing? Your personality, your mood?
Maybe it depends on your intention. The whole difference is going to be differentiated with your intention.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to recognize what you're doing is a kind of suppressing yourself as in a negative point. You try to cut yourself short. You try to swallow your character in order to get fit in a special context.
Okay.
This is going to be called suppressing yourself.
Okay, can you give me an example of when this has happened with you?
With me?
Yeah, because I need something practical here to...
I do not really rely too much on what other people might think of me. So therefore, I don't think I'm a sort of a person who would do a lot of interaction with other people to get put in such a situation where I have to suppress myself. But there are situations in which, for example...
Because I think I'm pretty similar in that sense. Don't suppress myself. So I think it's like maybe we're not qualified to talk about this. You know?
Well, we have seen examples, but the problem is that sometimes examples are not on top of your tongue.
Mm-hmm.
But we can relate to the things we just imagine in our own mind. Like, for example, there are people who would... like, you have to forget about your dignity to go for some special sort of actions or jobs or interaction with other people. They do it because of the fact that they just want to be an accepted person in that society, mm-hmm. in that context, mm-hmm. in that group of people. Like, I know these group of friends are not so much of good people, but since they are the prominent groups in, for example, among the relatives or in the school or at the university, I try to get close to them. I try to make myself a part of them, forgetting about all my rules, all my borders, forgetting about my dignity, most importantly.
Mm-hmm.
I forget about my character just to get accepted according to the norms of some special group of people.
But you still didn't give me a practical example from your...
It's because I told you, I just don't remember a practical example, but these are close, I guess. So, just as we're thinking about a practical example, let's go for a break, and then we'd be back. Anyway,
Muslims wash themselves in the bathroom, right? After mm-hmm. they use the toilet, they wash themselves. But this is very, very embarrassing to explain to your school friends when you're around 10 to 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always like, I can't go to the toilet in the school. Boys' toilet in a school in the UK.
Of course not.
They are the worst places in the world. They are disgusting. So yeah, you can't use it. And then one time I was having a discussion with my friends and I was like, but you do wash yourself when you go to the shower, right? And they were like, no, we don't wash ourselves there either. And I was so shocked and disgusted that this is, see, cleanliness is looked down upon, right? In that sense. And it's just, I can't believe it. Anyway, when Corona came and then everybody was like, scrambling over each other for toilet paper. You remember that was happening in the West and they were just going crazy over toilet paper and they were like pushing over old ladies in the supermarket to just like get their toilet rolls and stuff. At that time, many of the Muslims, well, I know one brother in the UK
mm-hmm.
and he was like, listen, he told his white non-Muslim friends, just wash yourselves. And he gave them one of those, we call it a lota. It's like a thing. Because they don't have hoses over there, do they? Over here in Iran, most houses have like these hose pipes. Over there, you don't have that. So you have to have this kind of jug or bottle next to the thing. It's called a lota. And then he gave that to his white non-Muslim friend. And he said, use this. And he was so thankful. You know, so... After a long time, you gain this maturity and you start to understand that you can actually be yourself. And you should
express yourself.
Yeah. In reality, I should have had the courage to be that, like, you guys are disgusting. You don't even wash yourselves.
Yeah.
But I didn't. And therefore, I was suppressing myself. in order to just fit in.
Yeah, and I guess that happens a lot when you're younger. When you're out of school, this might happen a lot because you do not have the courage to stand for yourself, to speak up, to express yourself. And just as I said, you want to be accepted by the majority of your classmates, by the majority of people who have impact in that society. So that's why you forget about your own self, your mm-hmm. own character, just to get fit in.
Yeah.
Which I guess as you get older, you would understand that the only thing that you have to fit in are the rules that are set by Allah. And all the restrictions and rules that are there and have been planned for us and have been clarified for us by the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So, just speaking of the notion of misfit, we already know that sometimes the things we believe in, which are right, are not accepted by the majority of people. And those majority of people are not going to be the criteria for what we are doing. The criteria is only what Allah has set for us and whatever the Holy Book of Quran is telling us. That's the only thing we have to stick to.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff, like what these people are going to think of me, like what these majority of people are going to be enemy against me, these things are not going to matter too much.
Yeah, yeah.
And we should not care about it too much. Mm-hmm, we should mm-hmm. not put too much of emphasis on that.
Yeah.
Like, try to accept this very fact that sometimes you alone is going to make too many changes and you do not have the approval of all the people and of all the members of society. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the right thing, then express yourself
mm-hmm.
and do not let go of it just because or in the expense of the fact that, okay, don't just let it go just because the majority of people do not approve of it.
Yeah.
Also, we have it in the Holy Book of Quran that it is not with the number of people that the change is going to occur.
Mm-hmm.
It's with how decisive you are and how right is the intention that you have.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are just a small group of people who wish to do something and they're not approved by other people in the society, but eventually and in the end, they are going to make everyone believe in what they say. Or mm-hmm. even if not that, then God is enough. The fact that He is satisfied with you is the only thing that matters.
So yeah, that's it, guys. Be brave and bold in what you believe in. Never be shy. And, you know, it's often the thoughts that you have in your mind are often the right thoughts. And remember, it all goes back to that internal hujja, which is actually pointing you in the right direction. And sometimes you find yourself in a society or amongst people who are doing the opposite of what is right, and you need to have the courage to say, this is wrong.
Exactly.
At the same time, you need to recognize that sometimes the society that you're living in is actually doing the right thing, and it's on the right direction. Inshallah, may we find such a society. In that case, we need to be with the jama'ah and with the congregation.
Very true.
That's all we have time for. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif,
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif. Allah, Allah, Allah.
in the limelight.
Iran's defense minister has emphasized in a meeting with his Chinese counterpart the importance of enhancing cooperation and convergence between Tehran and Beijing, working on security issues in the region as well as the wider world. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. Iran and China's defense chiefs discuss ways to enhance military cooperation, also conferring on regional issues. Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, met with his Chinese counterpart, Dong Jun, on the sidelines of the 21st meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization defense ministers meeting in Astana, Kazakhstan, on Friday. Defense Minister Brigadier General Ashtiani hailed China's stance on the ongoing developments in the region and its condemnation of Israel's terrorist airstrike against Iran's diplomatic premises in the Syrian capital Damascus earlier this month. It is necessary for Iran and China to boost cooperation and convergence to solve security issues in the region and across the world, Iran's defense minister emphasized. On 1st of April, the Israeli regime carried out a terrorist airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in the Syrian capital Damascus, which killed two Iranian generals, members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and General Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahimi, as well as five other IRGC officers. In retaliation, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, targeted the occupied Palestinian territories on 13th of April with a barrage of drones and missiles. The retaliatory strikes, dubbed Operation True Promise, inflicted damage on Israeli military bases across the occupied Palestinian territories. Following the reprisal, Iran warned Israel against taking any retaliatory action and also urged the United States to try not to involve itself in the conflict and signaled that it viewed the matter as concluded. China supports Iran's retaliatory airstrikes against Israel. The Chinese Defense Minister Dong Jun, for his part, slammed Israel's attack on Iran's diplomatic premises in Damascus, which he said violated international laws. China supports Iran's legitimate right to respond to Israel, Dong added. He invited his Iranian counterpart, Brigadier General Ashtiani, to take part in a security conference in Beijing and urged for enhanced bilateral cooperation in defense and military arenas. The Chinese defense chief called for an immediate ceasefire in the war-stricken Gaza Strip and the delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza. At least 34,356 Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been killed and 77,368 people have been wounded in the war that Israel began on 7th of October last year. The war began following a retaliatory operation by the Palestinian territory's resistance movements. Israel's brutal military onslaught has been supported militarily and politically by Israel's Western allies, including the United States and France. Meanwhile, China's special envoy to the Middle East has said Iran is a special partner for Beijing in West Asia, appreciating Tehran's measures in the region. China's special envoy to the Middle East, Zhai Jun, made the remarks on Friday during a meeting with Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister for Political Affairs, Ali Bagheri Kani. The meeting took place in Moscow on the sidelines of the consultations of deputy foreign ministers and special envoys of the BRICS group of emerging economies. The meeting was on Middle East. China's special envoy for Middle Eastern affairs, Zhai Jun, condemned the Israeli regime's recent terrorist attack against Iran's diplomatic premises in Damascus, Syria, and thanked Tehran for its actions in defense of the Palestinian people's rights. China is Iran's largest trading partner, both countries are subject to different levels of illegal sanctions imposed by the United States. They have enjoyed close ties in recent years, particularly after the United States reinstated sanctions on Iran's economy in 2018, after unilaterally withdrawing from the 2015 nuclear deal. The two countries signed a landmark 25-year partnership agreement in March of 2021 in an attempt to strengthen their long-standing economic and political alliance. The deal was announced during President Xi Jinping's visit to Tehran back in 2016. It sets the outlines of China-Iran cooperation in political, cultural, security, defense, regional, and international domains for the next 25 years. Earlier, on Friday, 26th of April, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister for Political Affairs, Ali Bagherikani, held talks with Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister and Special Presidential Representative for the Middle East, Mikhail Bogdanov. The two men discussed bilateral relations between Tehran and Moscow, as well as various regional issues. In an address to the BRICS meeting on Thursday, Bagherikani called on the member states to play a role in putting an immediate stop to Israel's crimes against Palestinians during Israel's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. He also underlined the need for sending humanitarian aid to Gaza, urging the complete withdrawal of the Israeli military forces from the besieged Palestinian territory. The Al-Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story. Iran and China's defense ministers discuss ways of elevating military cooperation between the two countries and conferred on a host of regional issues. On the sidelines of the 21st meeting of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization member states' defense ministers in Astana, Kazakhstan, on Friday, 26th of April, Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Ashtiani, met and conferred with his Chinese counterpart, Dong Jun. Brigadier General Ashtiani praised China's stance on the ongoing developments in the region and its condemnation of Israel's attacks against Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria. He emphasized the importance of enhancing cooperation and convergence between Tehran and Beijing, working on security issues in the region as well as the wider world. On the other hand, the Chinese defense minister Dong Jun condemned the Israeli attack on Iran's embassy building in Damascus and stressed that it breached international laws. Dong Jun further highlighted that China backs Iran's legitimate right to respond to Israel. He invited the Iranian defense minister Ashtiani to a security conference in Beijing, further emphasizing the importance of elevating bilateral cooperation in defense and military matters. The Chinese defense minister also urged an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and the delivery of humanitarian aid to the besieged territory. According to China's Xinhua news agency, following phone discussions on 16th of April between China's foreign minister Wang Yi and the Iranian foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian, Iran said it was willing to exercise restraint following the retaliatory strikes on Israel. According to China's Xinhua news agency, the Iranian foreign minister Amir Abdullahian relayed to Wang Yi that the United Nations Security Council did not make a necessary response to this attack, and he referred to the 1st of April Israeli aggression on Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria, saying Iran has the right to self-defense in response to the violation of its sovereignty. Hossein Amir Abdullahian said his country was willing to exercise restraint with no intention of escalating tensions further, given that the regional situation was very sensitive. The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi responded that China strongly condemns and firmly opposes the attack on Iran's embassy building in Damascus, Syria, and sees it as a serious violation of international laws and as totally unacceptable. The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi added, China appreciates Iran's stress on not targeting regional and neighboring countries, as well as its reiteration on continuously pursuing a good neighborly and friendly policy. IRB English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is a part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the heads of Iran's three branches of government and a number of current and former government officials. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on April 3, 2024. The Quran states, Except for those who repent and make amends. Chapter 2, verse 160. In several places in the Quran, repent is followed by and make amends. Now, in one section, make amends is also followed by and clarify, chapter 2, verse 160. And in another section, it is followed by and hold fast to God, chapter 4, verse 146. In other words, repentance and turning back must be accompanied by making amends. When we do something that is wrong and then turn back and seek forgiveness from Almighty God, we must also work toward removing the effects and consequences of that wrongdoing.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
What is meant by a wrongdoing is not a misconduct. According to the jurisprudential rulings that is done without intent. We are referring to actions that are morally bad or wrong, like personal wrongdoings. For example, backbiting, lying, and slandering are all wrongdoings. When we repent, we must make amends and correct matters. We must remove the effects and repercussions that are a result of that wrongful action. We must fix the consequences of our mistake. The exact same process is applicable to social issues. The Quran then states, Plead with your Lord for forgiveness, then turn to Him penitently. He will send copious rain for you from the sky and add power to your present power. Chapter 11, verse 52. Don't you agree that we want a strong country? Don't you agree we aspire to be strong? Very well, He will add power to your present power. Istighfar and repentance strengthens you. This means turning back from our transgressions. Transgressions weaken us, but turning back from our transgressions strengthens us. He will add power to your present power. It is like this in all matters, both in personal matters and in social matters.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
As the world celebrated 30 years since the end of apartheid in South Africa, protesters assembled in their thousands in London calling for an end to the Israeli apartheid and echoing the global demand for a ceasefire in Gaza.
We are here to call for the victory of the Palestinian struggle, that for us it means the end of this genocidal war against Gaza, against the West Bank for us, and against all the Palestinian people.
It's not in our name. We are selling, England is selling arms to Israel, and it's got to stop. They're creating genocide, and we don't want any part of it.
At the destination of the march in Hyde Park, speaker after speaker, including Northern Ireland's First Minister Michelle O'Neill, called out the American, European, and British government's complicity in the Israeli regime's crimes.
Peace is always possible.
The march came only weeks after the British Prime Minister gave a Downing Street address condemning extremism and saying the protests risked descending into mob rule, and his counter-extremism commissioner claimed London was becoming a no-go zone for Jews on Saturdays. That received pushback from a number of Jewish community leaders and members. And so the tussle between pro-Palestine marchers exercising their freedom of speech and those who want to cancel those marches continue.
The main theme of this protest, as with the previous ones, the killing of so many civilians in the Gaza Strip and the continued UK military and diplomatic support for the Israeli regime. There's also an element of defiance, too, to all the attempts that have been made to disrupt and to antagonize these protests. The protesters here are saying they aren't going anywhere and that they will be coming back again and again as long as the massacre continues. Saeed Poreza, London.
In South Korea Saturday, protesters of U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza marched past the U.S. Embassy and through Seoul's downtown. Abuse and arrests of pro-Palestinian demonstrators at American colleges resonated with South Korean students.
Politicians and the media, in their attempt to justify such a crackdown, slander the Palestinian Solidarity Movement as spreading anti-Semitism. But history will remember them as accomplices in genocide.
This is the 32nd rally of South Korea's people in solidarity with Palestine, protesting against Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. As more and more reports surface outlining Israeli atrocities there, concern here grows over the situation in Rafah and Israel's increasing attacks against civilians there.
Participants call for a stoppage to Israel's imminent ground invasion of Rafah. At Seoul National University, a professor is under investigation for defacing a pro-Palestine poster after harassing a student. Such pressure tactics are seen by some demonstrators as an opportunity to set the record straight.
The professor, who's a Zionist, obviously, is trying to silence our voices about speaking up about against the genocide that is happening in Gaza and the occupation of Palestine. But at the same time, I feel like this is a chance for us to raise more awareness about what is happening and about why Zionism is, why Zionism is bad.
Meanwhile, at the United Nations, the United States became even more isolated, vetoing the April 18th resolution to extend full membership to Palestine, with several U.S. allies, including South Korea, voting in favor. Frank Smith, Seoul.
While most Syrians are suffering from difficult economic conditions due to unlawful sanctions imposed by the United States and its Western allies, the U.S. has intensified its thievery of Syrian resources from the areas it illegally occupies in eastern Euphrates. Civil sources from Al-Yarubiya in the Hasakeh countryside reported that the U.S. occupation forces have transported dozens of trucks and tanks loaded with wheat, gas and oil to its bases in Iraqi territory in the past few weeks.
According to the Ministry of Oil, the total losses in the energy sector until 2022 amounted to more than $107 billion, including over $24 billion from oil and gas theft, over $3 billion due to infrastructure destruction, and over $80 billion in indirect losses resulting from the necessity of compensating for the missing resources through imports.
The U.S. occupies Syrian territory under the pretext of fighting the Daesh terrorist group, which Washington itself created.
The United States claimed to establish an international coalition to fight Daesh, while in fact they assassinated those who defeated this organization and fought for the freedom and safety of the Syrian people, including the martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and several Iranian generals, in addition to targeting the Syrian Arab army.
Syrians believe that the main reason for the United States' occupation of Syrian territories is the theft of its wealth and the destruction of its infrastructure. Syrians say the U.S. wants to weaken the state and its army, but furthermore to push the Syrian people away from Palestine and the excess of resistance in order to protect the Israeli regime.
They're doing this just to increase the prestige around the Syrian people, to suffocate the Syrian people more, to increase their suffering, and plus trying to diminish the Syrian role among the resistance countries in the region.
Syria's government, as well as other countries, have repeatedly condemned the ongoing violations by the U.S. as they blatantly steal Syrian wealth before the whole world without consequences, violating all international laws and forcing over 90% of the Syrian people to live below the poverty line, according to UN.
Despite the unjust Western sanctions on Syria, the theft of its national resources and the occupation of its land, the Syrian people's commitment to the Palestinian cause has grown stronger. Syrians are also determined to expel the U.S. and Israeli occupiers through resistance. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Amid rising tensions in the international waterways and the departure of several Western warships from the Red Sea, thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other cities across the country in yet another strong show of support for Palestine.
We took to the streets to protest for the women and children who are being killed by American and British weapons. Our naval forces will firmly continue operations as long as the aggression against the people of Gaza continues. And if the Yemenis are given the opportunity, there will be thousands of them rushing to fight for Palestine.
The Yemeni people are supporting and standing with our brothers in Gaza, and no sanction or action by United States and the United Kingdom will stop the Yemeni people. Yemeni people in Sana'a and other city continue and demonstrate weekly.
Protesters endorsed the Yemeni army's recent naval operations against Israeli-bound ships. They urged their armed forces to continue attacking the Israeli regime and its Western benefactors.
We support our naval and aerial forces operations, and we urge the army to